Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano coming up on Inside Coverage. How cool was that parade? We'll ask Matt Hasselbeck, the former Seahawk quarterback, who was there. Plus, let's start unpacking the offseason. Is Aaron Rodgers going back to Pittsburgh? What would you pay Malik Willis? And is there a trade in the making for Kyler Murray? Charles Robinson, Frank Schwab with me. Inside Coverage next. I want to open this show with a friendly reminder. There is no off season. And with that, we welcome you to an off-season edition of Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. I'm Andrew Siciliano. This is the how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. I am sitting here in a hotel room in the Milan of Connecticut, Greenwich, Connecticut, with wall-to-wall Olympic coverage. And I want to thank my teammates. We'll get to Joey Porter because he had something to say about teammates a little bit later. But I am very grateful for my teammates. And they are helping me keep my Olympic brain straight. Our Yahoo senior NFL writers, Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab, back from the Super Bowl, back in the home office, and back to help me out through a football offseason. Gentlemen, good to see you both.
I want to know how much Olympics Frank has watched thus far.
Frank, zero. That would be zero. No. I watched some of the U.S. women's hockey game. God. U.S. women, just that was good. I'll watch hockey. I'll watch a lot of hockey.
The win over Canada? That's what you watched? That was a
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Win.
When they won 5-0, they look really good. Yeah. So, that's the extent of my Olympics viewing so far. I will probably watch some of the men's too. I know Canada plays tomorrow. They're always fun. But that's about it. Yeah.
Okay, well let me lay out the facts here for Frank. First of all, Frank, of the 232 U.S. athletes, 232 in Milano Cortina, the U.S. state with the largest representation is the one in which you are currently sitting, the state of Colorado.
Right.
I should also tell you
Colorado Springs, the Olympic
dominating
city.
Yep. That dominating 5-0 win over Team Canada, in which, for example, Layla Edwards of Cleveland Heights, Ohio, who was leading the NCAA in scoring last year and went from forward to defenseman, she had a goal in that game. It was the first time that the Canadian women had ever been shut out in Olympic play, which is just ridiculous. Wow. And it sets up a grudge match, if you will, if and when these two teams meet again, as expected, because they do every year, every 4 years, in the gold medal final. And if you want to go back, Frank, to their big rivalry series in November and December, Team USA dominated them, the goal differential 24-7. So the last five games, Frank, the goal differential is 29-7.
Pretty impressive. As somebody who went to a school that dominates women's hockey on Wisconsin, yes, I appreciate it. I respect the U.S. women's team. That I hope they win it all. That'd be awesome.
29-7. It sounds like a Super Bowl score. I won't name who, but we had a dinner on Friday night, and I had a certain Yahoo Sports staffer who gave me the Patriots plus 17. That was quite a sweet.
It was not me.
It was not Frank, but he was there.
The Kenneth Walker holding. Me and Charles are walking for like 6 miles to the post-game availability, right? And we could hear things happening. And it was like, oh my God, Kenneth Walker just scored like this really long I was holding.
I was dead.
He went through the gamut of emotions with that, as maybe did I, because I had the I don't know. I mean, that's conjecture. But, you know, yes, it was. Yeah, you got lucky with the Kenneth Walker touchdown being called.
Hey. Patriots plus 17, baby. I had it all the way. There you go. That's a Vegas sharp right there.
Oh, yeah. Very, very sharp.
Of course, for recreational purposes only.
Only recreational purposes.
Little, of course.
Yes,
of course.
A fun little wager between friends, perhaps over a dinner. We spoke to Ben on Monday, and obviously that holding call changed a lot of people's fortunes. Oh, yeah. On Sunday evening, both good and bad, but Kenneth Walker likely had his fortunes change as well because he won the MVP, and John Schneider was up there today on the podium at the Seattle Championship Parade with a red solo cup, joking about re-signing Kenneth Walker and getting an MVP chant going from the well-lubricated crowd in the streets of Seattle. So I think Kenneth Walker is good I think he is going to get his deal done. And by the way, Matt Hasselbeck was there. He's going to join us coming up in a little bit. But as we continue here in the offseason, gentlemen, let's get to the heavy lifting right now. Because there is no offseason. We are only a couple of weeks away from all getting back together at the Combine. At the Combine, it's really the start before free agency. It's where all the deals get done to the back rooms over brown liquor and dry fit and Bud Light bottles and overcooked steak in the middle of the night, long after all the workouts are done and the TV cameras are put away. So you want to do this? You want to play the quarterback musical chairs game right now? You want to start?
Might as well. It's going to be a whole offseason. Okay. It's a bleak. It's not. It's not a great field. It's not a great field.
It's not a good year. It's not. There are inevitably going to be names that shake free that maybe we don't anticipate right now shaking free. There are going to be quarterbacks who right now are not day one picks, who by the time we get to April 23rd, shockingly, are day one picks. Quarterbacks that are day three picks that become day two picks. There are trades to be made, moves to be made. But when it comes to the free agent quarterbacks, it's an interesting class. It ain't a great class because remember, the good ones generally don't come free. Good quarterbacks don't become free agents. Now, there are interesting quarterback projects. And I think this year, the most interesting, I don't know that I would even call him a project now. When he was drafted 4 years ago, he was a project coming out of Liberty. But Malik Willis of the Green Bay Packers, who we saw in December off the bench when Jordan Love was banged up, and in January as well. Malik Willis is a guy that has, when he has been on the field for Green Bay, put up utterly spectacular numbers. But he is a guy that can only go to one team, Charles. If I had a dollar every time I had a fan base or somebody, an assistant coach, go, well, maybe we go get Malik Willis. Okay, that's great. He's going to get rich. I would love to see him go to the Raiders and have them package those picks, go sign the veteran free agent quarterback and go do something else at number one. That's just me. It's just me. But I don't think that's going to happen. What do you think, Charles, the market looks like for Malik?
Well, we've had a lot of debate about this. Frank and I as well at the Super Bowl. I mean, We were kind of debating what kind of contract he was going to have. And I can't nail it down because I think I just can't wrap my head around, you know, Frank thought, what was your number, Frank? You thought he was 35 million a year?
It may have been. Yeah, it may have been late at night and I said 30 million a year. I overshot that, but I mean, I still think it's going to be not high. Go ahead.
Charles,
it's like,
no, go ahead. I mean, say what that's no, the argument.
Quarterback You're carousel. Look, I don't think people have really done the math on the quarterback carousel. There's about 7-8 teams, if Aaron Rodgers retires, that are have no idea what they're doing at quarterback week one. None. Like literally, you can ask each of those teams, who's your week one starter? And it would just be a blank stare because there's just no answer on the roster. Now, how many quarterbacks are available? Usually like, oh, well, the draft is going to produce a few. The draft is producing one guy who should start day one. Like maybe some other guys get forced into that. So, okay, that's one out of the draft for these 7 or 8 teams that need a quarterback. Free agency, okay, there's going to be guys available. 43-year-old Aaron Rodgers, 38-year-old Kirk Cousins. Okay. And then you got Malik Willis. So I think you're going to see 5-6 teams who are saying, we have no options but Malik Willis. And then you get a bidding war. And I think I overshot it when we were at dinner screwing around. But right now, as I sit here, I really do think it's going to be $25 million a year. Just because the supply and demand, he's the bell of the ball. He's the only guy to prime age who you're like, you could squint and say, yeah, he could play. Like we've seen it at least in some of these GMs. I mean, not to call it names, but the guy in Arizona, like you're like, well, if I don't fix the quarterback right now, I'm not going to keep my job. And this is going to be somebody else's mess anyway. So why not roll the dice on Malik Willis? I think Malik Willis is going to get paid a lot more than we think he will.
I think the calculus comes down to, you know, what quarterbacks stay in place that you know, yes, we presumed at some point Kyler Murray is going to be out in Arizona. I'm not sure about that right now. Yeah, we presumed at some point that Aaron Rodgers was going to retire. I don't know about that now. You know, we talk about who else? Oh, you know, Mac Tua. Jones. I think Mac Jones, the San Francisco 49ers, will listen to calls on that and see if there is some element of desperation that could pry loose, you know, a solid draft pick. Tua, you know, I think Tua, that's probably the one situation where I still feel like that looks like a parting company. But again, with the overall change there,
but they got all their options.
When you have a wholesale change, right?
It is, it might about be a shotgun options. Wedding next year with Tua and the Dolphins. Like, you might be like, well, okay, we're going to cut Tua, and then what? Like, there's nothing else. Malik, we're really going to roll with Zach Wilson and take a $90 million dead cap hit? Like,
in terms of the Malik Willis money, though, I mean, I think what's interesting here is, and this was probably what we debated, you know, all week during the Super Bowl, whenever we would talk about Malik, is what does that contract look like? And I have to presume that it's going to be like a Justin Fields-esque contract that he signed with the Jets, which is essentially we'll give you a year of guaranteed money, a year and a half of guaranteed money. And if you ball out, and by the way, Matt LaFleur and Matt LaFleur's system's not going with him, right? So you don't really know what this is going to look like when he exits that environment. So you give him a year and a half of guaranteed money, and you basically say, look, let's say it's 25 AAV, right? So let's say you sign him to a 2-year $50 million deal, you guarantee 35 of it. And you say, look, if you ball out after year one, we'll go back to the table. We're not going to let you get through the second year of this deal. It's really all about, we're going to give you a Baker Mayfield type of opportunity, a Sam Darnold type of opportunity, although we're going to pay a heck of a lot more than those guys. And you're going to come in. If you show us, if you can make like Baker made in Tampa, if you can make like Sam Darnold made in Minnesota, you're going to sign a massive deal the following offseason. That's the structure, I think, that is in play here. But again, the number of suitors, I think it just depends on what quarterbacks we see parting company. And I think the two old guys that you just mentioned, Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins, I don't think they're going anywhere. I think they're going to be in the NFL next year. I really do. And I think that affects that market for us.
So I'm just scribbling this out, trying to structure this deal here. So you want my numbers? Here's my math. And I have not canvassed GMs yet. I was actually about to text somebody as we sit here, but I hate doing that, but at least now waiting for an answer immediately. So my math would be 80/3. Okay. 80 million over three with the first 50 guaranteed. So you're guaranteeing 25 per the first 2 years. The average is 26.66. You get your 50 guaranteed, and then year three, if we're there, is 30.
That's crazy money, right? I mean, this is
it's a little crazy, but again, supply and demand, Charles. It's going to be wild. It's going to be wild out there.
I don't. This is my thing here. We've talked about this before, and obviously, it's not rising to the level of like a Tua situation or a Jordan Love situation. But we've talked in the past about, you know, okay, there's obviously concerns about potential injury. The way that he plays, the running has to be a part of that, right? So there's a law of diminishing returns in running quarterbacks, right? So you're really splitting this and you're saying, okay, how do we expect him to play as an RPO quarterback who's going to be running the ball, let's say 10 times a game, 12 times a game? So there's that risk. There's the size risk. There is the limited resume risk. And then, again, I'll give him his flowers for what he did in Green Bay. It's certainly not what I expected. I remember standing in Tennessee Titans practice and hearing Mike Vrabel scream at him to speed up his clock in terms of just getting the play out in the huddle and getting the line of scrimmage and trying to get the ball snap with time still on the play clock. I think he has turned a corner in those respects. But again, it makes me nervous when you take him away from where he's had success and now you're going to pay him all this money. And I don't doubt, Andrew, that $50 million could be in play for him in terms of guaranteed money. It just, to me, feels like, are we really this desperate? Like, wow, we are in absolute desperation mode. And this, to me, means
I think we are.
This league can't get to that 2027 quarterback class fast enough.
Let's compare it to Daniel Jones from last year, okay? Daniel Jones was discarded by the Giants. Just wrap your head around that. The guy that was in line to get an MVP was waived at his request by the Giants after getting benched. Now, they found their guy seemingly, so it's worked out, but whatever. He went to Minnesota, and then he went to Indianapolis for what, like 1 year, 15, something like that, 15 up to 18, 18, whatever the deal was. Okay, if Daniel Jones had stayed healthy, let's say they got in the wild card round, they washed out in the first round, okay? What would his contract look like if he had not gotten hurt?
45. North of 40, I would say north of 40.
Okay,
you know, I think it slots north of 40, probably.
Sure, Okay, he did get hurt, and the contract now, who knows what it looks like. It's an Achilles. A big part of his game was the mobility in Indianapolis. A huge part of the game was Shane Steichen. Is he going to be the same guy? Probably not. It's the year back from an Achilles. He's still a young man, but, I mean, you know, Mother Nature's undefeated. You got to give it a year, or at least a little bit of time, before you're truly, truly a mobile running quarterback and a threat again with your legs. But if he had hit the free agent market, I mean, the Colts would have legitimate competition, or just franchise him, whatever you do.
Franchise.
I don't think the money we're throwing around for Malik Willis is absolutely ridiculous. If you had the choice right now, Malik Willis or, say, Jimmy Garoppolo, who could have gone anywhere in the offseason, came back to the Rams to sit there behind Matthew Stafford, knowing he's the backup plan if Stafford's back doesn't hold up, but in reality, he's likely never going to see the field. Would you pay Jimmy Garoppolo or Malik Willis right now?
Willis, where's my where's the organization at? Like, what is the rest of the team?
That's fair.
Like?
That's a fair question.
Like, is it a veteran team? I mean, if it's a team that is built to win right now, I have to think about, you know, do I plug Jimmy in there? But if it's a team where you're still reaching for ceiling, you know, it's a young team and you're developing, then I think you take Willis because he's got the ceiling. You want him to grow with the team. You want him to grow with the offense. Whereas, you know, Garoppolo to me he's just a classic bridge. Like, Garoppolo is either you have nothing and you're sitting there and saying, we just need a 1 year stopgap starter who might not even start for the entire 2026 season. Then I go get Jimmy Garoppolo. You're not signing Malik Willis for that. You're signing Malik Willis saying, let's hope for the best case scenario in all of this, which means
he's number two. Yeah.
He'll be our starter for hopefully 10 years if we sign Malik Willis.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels very Scott Mitchell-esque, where we're paying a guy based on like seven good games or whatever Scott Mitchell had.
Good pull, yeah.
Back. Wait, did you That's cover him, pull. By the way?
With, the Dolphins. Was that your era? When he was with the Dolphins. No, that was prior.
Because I know you covered
was
in high about that
the
time.
Great Lakes offense.
You
remember the Great Lakes offense?
Aging you a little too much.
Okay, I got a good one. Yeah. It's not good because it involves an injury, but this kid right here, was in the stands when Dan Marino blew his Achilles out in Cleveland with the Dolphins, and Scott Mitchell was called onto the field to begin the Scott Mitchell era, and he was picked off by Najee Mustafa, 97-yard pick six in that game. And then Scott Mitchell kept doing his thing and eventually got paid and went to Detroit. Yeah.
What'd I tell you, Frank?
But getting back to
we talked about Andrew's encyclopedia brain. When we do these. Yeah.
I was at the game.
The thing about Malik is, I do believe, and I don't know if you guys disagree, I think of all the realistic available quarterbacks, he's number two on the list. I think Mendoza's number one because he has that first pickup side, right? But I would take Willis over Rodgers. I'd take Willis over Cousins. I would take Willis way over Kyler. I would Tua. I'd take him over. Like, I don't know. I can't. And yes, Malik Willis is a very risky thing, but at least he's on the ascension. We talk about Justin Fields really quick. Think about back when he got $20 million a year, Justin Fields had been benched by the Steelers. He'd been replaced by the Bears. Like, his arrow was pointing down, and he still got $20 million a year. I think at least with Willis, you could tell yourself a story where the arrow's pointing up, and there's something more to come with him.
Well, he's got a nice arm. So, I he really is. The mobility is
he's
real.
He's got skills. You know, he's got physical skills. Have a skill that game against the Ravens was excellent. Yep.
Yeah.
I did reach out to somebody that at least has a little bit of experience and not in the Malik Willis market here. And the answer was, it's a tough one. 25-ish on the upside was their thought.
Okay.
On the upside.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
all it takes is one. If there's competition in the market.
That's exactly it.
All it takes is two. Yeah, two teams are bidding. Well, yeah. There you go.
Even if it's just one team, 25 seems about right. If it's just one team,
and look what just happened with Sam Darnold. Look what just happened with Sam Darnold.
Yeah. 18th highest paid quarterback, by the way.
I used that. I stole that from you on Sunday night, Charles. Straight stole it from you for my story.
And remember after free agency last year, we sat here going, all right, he got a 3-year, $90 billion deal, whatever. And you're like, it's really, they can get out after one.
Damn, it's not a real deal, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Can get after one. All right. We got a list here, which quarterbacks could be traded. We could agree Joe Burrow's not going to get traded. I've said it 1,000 times. There's no way on God's green earth, Joe Burrow is getting traded. Nod your head if you're in agreement. We're all in agreement here.
Unless
Joe Burrow
like,
is
here's seven first round picks or something like that's just literally insane.
You can't trade seven first round picks. It won't be seven first round picks. He is not in any way getting traded. However, I think Kyler is. It's just because it's easier to trade him financially than cut him. This is just me, and I could be wrong. Charles, you're making a face. And if you have insight, then I want to hear it. But it is easier, we agree, financially to trade him than to cut him. But the question would be, which team or coach says,
I want that.
Want him as my guy. Right. I want him to be the guy in the front of the room and running out of the tunnel first for me, and I'm putting my name on it.
Yeah, I mean, the financial ramifications, yes, a trade is definitely in their best interest. But number one, that's assuming an acquiring team doesn't say, we're not paying all this money. Like, you're going to have to figure out something here because we're not going to pay all that salary.
Of it, sure.
Yeah, you want to eat some of that? That's fine, but we're not going to do this the way it's currently structured. And then once you get past the financial part of it, you have to get to what was he in Arizona? Was he a good teammate? Was he a hard worker? You know, where did he show the upsides and why did it never last? Is he healthy? Man, we're getting down the list. And oh, by the way, there's still a bias. I will just say it. There's still a bias in the NFL where people are going to look at Kyler and go, he's small. He's too small. I don't want a quarterback that small. And he hasn't proven that he can be consistently successful at that size on this level. So why? What would be the reasoning, you know, to go and hang your neck out on a Kyler Murray at this point, particularly if the Arizona Cardinals are actually trying to deal that salary, which is another reason why I think there's a chance he ends up remaining in Arizona, because I don't see the ease of moving him. And then, oh, by the way, replacing him. What are you replacing him with? Like, it's in some ways we talked, revisited the Kirk Cousins situation in Atlanta, and where we were all like, oh, they're getting rid of him. But they already paid him the money. And you know what? The Falcons sat there and they said, well, we got to go get a backup then if we let this guy go. And by the way, Michael Penix has shown over the course of his entire football career in college that he could be injury prone. And hey, look what happened. And Kirk Cousins was starting at the end of the season. That's why you keep the guy, because there's just no sense to eat the money, deal him for probably nothing, and then at the same time or cut him and watch someone else pick him up, and then you got to go play backup. I think Arizona, that's all the same problems. Whereas if you keep Kyler for a year, maybe things change on the landscape. And again, I think the 2027 class is going to be absolutely loaded with quarterbacks.
Okay, so Arizona's
picking. By the way, one real
quick
thing on the quarterback carousel, Andrew, if I could real quick. We haven't even talked about, well, Atlanta doesn't know if Penix is ready for week one. They might have to go get a veteran. The Vikings have already talked about going to get a veteran. Indianapolis, what if Daniel Jones doesn't come along as quick as they want? You really want Anthony Richardson starting the first month of the season? Right. You have not just teams looking for starters. You have teams who are like, we really need a good veteran backup. Good luck with that. Have fun. Yeah. Enjoy.
And there's only one surefire starter, we believe, and a lot could change. I'm going to keep pounding the table for Garrett Nussmeier. Trust me, by the time we get to the 23rd of April, Garrett Nussmeier's name will be in this conversation. Ty Simpson, people are going to be, they're going to have CSI right elbow injury for Ty Simpson to see if he's healthy and if he's okay. I mean, we have all these storylines here by the time we get to the combine in a couple of weeks. Let's just make up a trade. Arizona's picking three. They have the second pick in the second round at 34. Would you offer, Frank, if you're Monte Austin Fort, 334 and next year's number one to go up two?
I would, but I don't think the Raiders are biting on that. I think they're dug in. I think Mendoza's their guy. But yes, I why not? Like, you have no answer at quarterback. Absolutely none. He gives you a path. Like, yeah, if the Raiders are selling, I'd be buying. If I was any of those teams I've mentioned, any of them, I'd be buying.
Yeah, I would definitely. I'd probably throw more than that, honestly. Again, Monty Austin Fort. I know Monty. Talk to Monty every offseason. I go in there camp. And, you know, it's not a great position to be in right now for Monty Austin Fort. Like, something has to click here. And at the very least, if you're going to move away from Kyler, whatever you replace him with, absolutely has to be the type of player where now you are forecasting a horizon that's workable. Mendoza does that for you. I truly believe that. And by the way, I cannot think of a person or a personality. Look, all due respect to Kyler, but I can't think of a person or a personality who's more opposite than Kyler Murray at this point. And, you know, I think that's what you would be selling. So if you're Monty Austin for it, you're sitting there and you're saying, okay, maybe we give you the three. Maybe we give you two more firsts just to get from 3 to 1, because I'm not going to be here to spend them next offseason if this doesn't work out. If we go back to, you know, the assembly line with Kyler again and this breaks down, I'm probably gone next offseason anyway. So if the Raiders actually pick the phone up.
Can you imagine how disheartening it would be to the Cardinals to be like, our week one starting quarterback, you remember Kyler Murray? Like, oh my goodness.
They've sold that. Two off seasons, right?
I know. You can't do it again. You can't. The guy who basically benched and then went AWOL.
By the way, here's part of what I think might keep Kyler in Arizona. You changed out at the offensive coordinator spot, right? Like, you can sit there and say, well, maybe it was a Drew Petzing problem. Like, you can work it in your mind and say, maybe I'm not saying it was a Drew Petzing. By the way, I'm not saying that at all. I know, Drew.
I know this is a sales pitch.
But I'm saying you're trying to sell it to yourself. You're trying to sell it to the owner to get yourself in a space where this is what we got to do. So we have to figure out a way to create a narrative that makes this, makes some sense to people, even if it doesn't.
Yeah, all right. The Kyler thing is going to be huge in the offseason because I think everyone would appreciate some kind of closure, but I don't know that there is an obvious road to closure, and therein lies the rub. Coming up, we'll continue to unpack what will be a fascinating offseason. Travis Kelce, Max Crosby, A.J. Brown, where are any of them going to end up? And we go to Seattle, where Matt Hasselbeck had a good time today at the Seahawks celebration. You're listening to, and watching for that matter, Inside Coverage on Yahoo. It is Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Andrew Siciliano and our senior NFL writers, Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab. As I like to remind people, there is no offseason. We just spent 25 minutes talking about quarterbacks and didn't even get the entire way through the conversation. So keep that in mind. We have all kinds of time here in the offseason with free agency beginning, the new league year beginning the weekend or the week of March 11th. So, gentlemen, let's try to figure out Travis Kelce's future. Because given the opportunity multiple times since the season ended, Kelce has on multiple occasions, and he's got a podcast, he's got a forum, he's got social media, he was at the Super Bowl, he has not yet said what he is doing, which leads me to believe that the guy that turns 37 in October would like to come back. He had a decent season. He certainly rebounded. While he is aging, he didn't look as old as he did in 2024. Part of the conversation with Kelce is, Charles, what do you pay him? He doesn't need the money, but a future Hall of Famer is not going to work for free. He has Eric Bieniemy coming back as the offensive coordinator and has said on that podcast that he's very excited for that. My gut tells me he's going to play again.
I agree. I do. I think he's going to play again. And I think part of what factors there for him is he entered camp in good shape, right? Like I truly believe he had gotten to that point in his career as a veteran where you have some guys who show up and they go, I'm going to work into shape in training camp. I'll be in football shape once the season gets here. And then you'll see sometimes guys flip a switch, and we'll end up talking about this guy later. But I remember one time when Ben Roethlisberger showed up in shape for camp, which was unbelievable. It never happened.
Wait, the one time?
And
the one time.
It was like the one time. But he felt rejuvenated. I think Travis Kelce showed up to camp ready to go. I think he was healthy last year. I think it was a big deal that he was able to get through the season healthy. I think he felt good. And I think that gave him the enthusiasm to put another year in. And I also don't think he wants to finish the way that the Chiefs finished last year. And I do think Eric Bieniemy coming back in the fold matters. I've said before, I think Bieniemy is a coach that coaches players hard. And I think when he left the organization that part of what he brought to the table exited with him. And, you know, some players chafe under hard coaching. I don't think Travis Kelce is that type. I think it fires him up. So I do think that he's happy to have Bieniemy back. And, you know, I think they have something to prove. And, yeah, I, given all the opportunities he's had to go ahead and you know, walk it off, he's not doing that. And I have to believe that he'll be in the fold next year.
Yeah, I do wonder about the money part of this, though, because the Chiefs can't bring him back for what he's scheduled to be paid. Like, it just can't happen. So is Travis Kelce willing to kind of swallow his pride? Because you know how much this status means. You don't want to, all the headlines of Travis Kelce took a 50% pay cut or whatever it's going to be. Like, that's tough. And would, if it's just like, no, I won't take that pay cut, and the Chiefs say, well, Travis, then we got to move on, would he go play for the Bears? Or the Bears don't need a tight end, but you know what I mean. So I think that means a lot.
Okay, the survey says, and I feel like Bob Barker. No, who was the old? Yeah.
Yeah, Bob Barker, baby. Bob Barker,
right? Wow, legend. That's what you forget?
Man. Yeah, right? You can tell you got an interception in 1992. Yeah.
Bob Barker Kozar. Was only doing Price is Right for, what, 40 years?
$101 million dollars for Travis Kelce. So he doesn't want the money. We also all have a pride issue. And his significant other is not at a loss for money. I think they're going to work out a deal. Like, at this point, I'm not going to say I'd be stunned, but I think we all kind of agree we'd be surprised if Kelce doesn't come back.
A little. Like, I don't know. Like, he's at an age when, if you keep chasing this, like, storybook ending, it's probably not going to happen. Like, I know after last year, he was like, I don't want to go out like this, getting blown out by the Eagles. Well, now it's like, nah, I don't want to go out like this, going 6-11. Like, it's, you're probably not getting the storybook ending you want. But hey, Travis, if he wants to play as long as you want, like, I never am that guy who's like, this guy needs to retire to protect his legacy or anything like that. So yeah, he's still very capable of being, he's not Travis Kelce, but he's still a very productive tight end.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. It's, he played well. I'd advocate for it. You know, if he stays healthy and he top played well and he end, still yeah. wants to play football, and I feel like they're going to have a bounce back season. You know, I do think there's a point of pride not wanting to end that way, right? You know, your quarterback Absolutely. Suffers a season ending injury. You know, you're in the tank. It's one of the worst seasons you've ever experienced in the Chiefs franchise, the worst season you've ever experienced in the Chiefs franchise. And I think there's something to be said about, you know, just departing happy. It doesn't mean he has to win the Super Bowl, but certainly I don't think it would take a lot for them to reverse some of what happened last year.
Yeah. I totally agree with you.
And then there's the curious case of one Max Crosby, who obviously was upset at the end of the year when Pete Carroll and the Seahawks and John Spytek, the Raiders told him, Max, you're done. Like, you should go on IR. And the report was he stormed out of the building. He wasn't happy. He wanted to fight through his injuries. He had offseason surgery. He'll be good to go. Jake Lazor reported over the weekend that basically Crosby's told Brady and told Spytek, like, I'm out of here. Like, I'm not going to play again. At his introductory press conference, Clint Kubiak on Monday said the right things, which is, no, of course, we want him back. If I am the Raiders, and this is me, and they owe him $61-ish million on the last 2 years of the deal, which is a very affordable contract, but Myles Garrett's making 40 and Max Crosby's making 30, I ship him out. See, Rob, I say, who wants to give me the two number ones that was rumored to be the price for Miles? Although I think Miles, it would take three number ones and he's not for sale. I say, who wants to give me two number ones? I have so many gaping holes on this team. Go ahead. Call me.
It's a steep price. But I mean, if you can get two number ones at this stage, I would have to believe it'd be from a contending team. So those ones conceivably would be near the end of the first round. And as we all know,
Bears,
you know, how many first round grades you get? Now, 2027 will be different. It's going to be a loaded class. So you may have a class where there are 20 to 25 first round grades in that class, which would be astronomical. Normally it's half, you know, it's might be anywhere from 12 to 16 first round grades is probably a normal year for most NFL teams. But yeah, if you can get two firsts out of him, I definitely ship him. If you can't get two firsts out of him, I don't know, man. If I'm Clint Kubiak, I'm sitting there and I'm saying, if I have the belief that I'm going to draft Fernando Mendoza and I get the quarterback position right, and we can throw some assets into the offensive line, and I feel like with some scheme changes, Genty should play better and Clint Kubiak's, you know, zone scheme. To me, I just looked at a Seattle defense that set the tone and the culture of the franchise. That wasn't set by Sam Darnold. It wasn't set by Jackson Smith and Jigba, who, you know, wonderful player. But let's be honest, the culture was set into place with how that defense played and Mike McDonald, how he schemed it. I'd keep Max only because if I can't get the assets out of him, I know I'm going to get two good seasons. Max Crosby still has two top-end seasons, I believe, in him. And so maybe you don't turn around 2026, but I bet you could get it up and running in 2027, maybe, in the AFC West. But yeah, if you can get the assets, I don't see how you could turn down two first-round picks. It's just where do those come from? You think the Bears? You think that's the destination?
I just know people in Chicago wanted Myles Garrett last year. And when I say people in Chicago, I mean Bears fans, local sports talk radio. Right, Washington, Chicago, those are the ones that my phone would blow up from.
They need a pass rusher desperately. They definitely need to address that.
Guys, there's one obvious answer here. Which team loves trading its picks, making big splashes? Which team is a contender that just lost the NFC Championship game? And oh, by the way, has an extra first-round pick this year? Why not the Rams? Like, do the Rams need Max Crosby? No, but Les is like, hey, we know his motto about the picks. Why not the Rams?
Here's my caveat, and I'll give you the why not. I don't know that they're in that mode anymore, although you're at the end of the road for Stafford. You got to give them one more payday. So, I understand your reasoning there, Frank. The reason, though, I would say no is that this offseason they don't need to, but they could pay Byron Young and Kobe Turner and that class, because they just finished year three. And next offseason, they have to pay the Jared Verse and Braden Fisk class. So they have drafted well, and part of drafting well is you need to keep your guys. You can't keep all of them, but those core guys have earned their extensions. Can your cap hold paying Max Crosby 60 over 2 years? I don't know.
Over 2 years, yeah. I mean, I think you're right. They have to extend a lot of guys, but you can make that in a way where the cap hits aren't really going to start hitting you till Max is done, basically. It falls off your books. I think it's a perfect fit, to be honest with you. And the Rams should have every reason to believe we could win a Super Bowl next year. Why not? We almost won a Super Bowl this year.
Well, don't forget, I mean, how much longer is Stafford going to play? So, you know, you have a quarterback salary that's going to come off your cap.
Two tops.
You know, so if he only plays in 2026, you're going to have a sizable chunk of money available to you all of a sudden. It's intriguing. There's no doubt. And let's not forget, they tried to peel Brian Burns off that Carolina Panthers staff a year earlier than he got traded. And they offered two first-round picks. That didn't get the deal done then. Age difference is obviously significant. But at that time, they're also not staring at Matt Stafford and saying, we got to get everything we can out of this 2026 season. Max Crosby would be a move to do that, no doubt.
Yeah, I also think that was the best move that did not happen for the Rams. In retrospect,
I'd agree with that.
I'm thrilled for them that deal did not go through. All right, C-Rob, what are you hearing after a week at the Super Bowl on A.J. Brown?
Hi, man. I'm telling you, I think they're going to try to make it work. I really do. If it's going to move, you're going to hear it at the combine. I don't think there's any question. That's when you're going to really start to hear about A.J. Brown potentially being on the move. But I just don't think Howie Roseman wants to move him at this point, because I think then he stares at his roster and he feels like he has a hole. I mean, A.J. Brown, for whatever we want to say about him, at his top end, when he was playing his best football for the Philadelphia Eagles, there's zero question that would be a huge hole in their offense. And where are you going to go to fill it at this point? By the way, A.J. Brown's salary, it's pretty decent. I mean, compared to what, you know, where wide receiver money is going, it's not horrific. It's not great. But I think to replace them, unless you're going to draft a wide receiver, unless you're sitting there and you're saying, okay, once we get past, I mean, I guess we'd have to wonder, where does Jordan Tyson end up going? Where does Mekhi Lemon go? You know, how high is Carnell Tate, you know, taken off the board? Maybe one of those three receiver stretches to the Eagles pick. Where are they picking now? I think 19. Is that right?
Keep talking.
I feel like it's late teens. I think it might be the 19th pick.
The Eagles are picking picking 23rd.
Oh, wow. That's a lot. Wow. 23rd. Okay. That's yeah. further back than I expected. You know, I don't know. How do you feel about Denzel Boston? There's KC Concepcion. I mean, there's
I like him.
I like him. Look, the second half of the first round is going to have, I think, a lot of wide receiver talent. They're also sitting there at 54. A.J. Brown wasn't their second round pick, but he was a second rounder. I mean, you can get legitimate talent in the second round at wide receiver, I think, in this draft. But are you, if you think you have this window here with Jalen Hurts and whomever and the parts on defense, do you say our offense is going to be Devontae Smith, at least, you know, a wide receiver, and some guy we took in the second round?
Okay, here's a question for you. You got to find, this is just like the Kyler Murray conversation, you also have to find another team that's willing to bring him in. Do you think Mike Vrabel and the wide receiver needy
Yes.
New England Patriots would not be staring at A.J. Brown and going, you know what, A.J. Brown's a pretty Absolutely. Damn good player for us. I wasn't super thrilled when we dealt him.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get this guy in here and he can be our number one immediately for Drake May. That would be a hell of an addition.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's the thing about the Eagles, too, though. Again, like, you just can't replace a number one receiver. Like, yeah, you could draft a rookie. Maybe that hits. Maybe you get Teteroa McMillan, but it's rare. And Devontae Smith, for as good of a player as he is, he's really not a true number one alpha. And I just, and a team in a super, the Eagles should feel like, all right, this was a down year. We'll be back next year. Look at all this talent on the roster. It's hard to trade A.J. Brown. It's really hard.
It's hard to replace him. I truly believe that. I think he's a hard person to replace.
Well, we got Matt Hasselbeck coming up. I want to throw two running backs at you real quick in our final 2 minutes here. Kenneth Walker, who obviously was playing games today with John Schneider during the parade. Kenneth Walker, Breece Hall, C-Rob, do either make it to free agency?
I think Breece Hall does. I believe Breece Hall. Kenneth Walker, I think, coming off the Super Bowl, John Schneider saying what he said today, you know, just kind of the vibes there. Mm-hmm. Feels like they'll figure out a way to pay him. Look, even for what he did, I'm just telling you, I still don't think anybody out there is ready to, you know, blow the top off the running back market, Super Bowl MVP or not. And remember, it wasn't that long ago that the Seattle Seahawks, and by the way, he was wonderful after they made the statement that availability matters. We'd like to have Kenneth Walker available to us. Well, when he became available, this is really ultimately what you reaped from that relationship. I do think he'll end up staying in Seattle. But yeah, Breece Hall, I honestly would be surprised, unless Breece Hall doesn't have a market out there. I would be surprised if he's with the New York Jets next year.
I think he will. And I'll give you the one team that just keeps coming to mind, the team that has Russell Wilson coming off the books this year. That was just an AFC championship game. Sean Payton loves spending money. We know that all of his teams are aggressive in free agency and they desperately need a running back. They would have, they might've won a Super Bowl with a Breece Hall at running back last year. I think that's the fit. I think Breece Hall ends up with the Broncos. I don't think there's any way Breece Hall wants to go back to that nonsense in New York. Why would he? Unless, like you said, there's no market for him, which I don't see happening.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that's a fun one in Denver. Free agent running backs don't get paid a lot. I think Breece Hall, even though he's had his injuries, is still a young, dynamic back.
Versatile.
That'll get paid, but paid is relative when it comes to the running back position. Coming up, as promised, Matt Hasselbeck. In Seattle, after enjoying a downtown parade today, because he is part of the Seahawks family. Also coming up, time for one more thing before we go, and it has to do with Ernest Jones at that parade. That's next on Inside Coverage. So it's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. I'm in a hotel room, and it is always good to have a guy on from a dive bar. Regardless of where the dive bar is, especially when Matt Hasselbeck is in a dive bar after a parade wearing like an old school Chuck Knox Seahawks hat. He's here with Bud Light and he's got a Bud Light bottle as well. What's going on, man?
It's not just a dive bar. It's a five-star dive bar called Ozzy's right near the Space Needle in Lower Queen Anne. And it's not just a bottle. It's an Anheuser-Busch special edition commemorative Super Bowl 60. The Roman numerals are LX. If you didn't know your Roman numerals, I played in Super Bowl 40, which was XL. But these guys got the commemorative cans and bottles and kegs and all that stuff because they got it done. And they got it done in commanding fashion.
Yeah, and then the parade got it done today as well. I'm judging from the hat and your energy and the bottle that you had a good time at the parade.
It was great. You know, I got my second wind. It was as you know, Super Bowl weeks can be tough. I was out here for the NFC Championship game as well and lost my voice at that. I mean, honestly, Seahawks-Rams game in the NFC Championship game was one of the most incredible games that I've seen. I mean, really, the three times the Rams played the Seahawks, they were just incredible games. So from the Super Bowl week, which, as you know, is a lot. And then that was a whole deal in San Fran, Santa Clara, San Jose, and it was just a great time. And then they made it back here, and the city just showed up. It was a beautiful, beautiful day here. The guard came and, you know, drove everybody around for the parade. They said 1 million people here in Seattle. And then we had this really awesome thing, giving away commemorative bottles, you know, for the celebration. It's like really awesome. A little, but really awesome.
Hey, you know, a parade is lit when the GM is up there. Like, I remember for the Rams parade in LA after they won, when Les Snead had on that like bleep them pick shirt. When John Schneider is up there, I don't have a red solo cup, but when he has a red solo cup up there trying to negotiate with Kenneth Walker, and Kenneth Walker is like reposting that on his accounts, that when the GM has a solo cup, Matt, that's my point. You know, the party's good.
Well, I mean, listen, Les Snead and John Schneider, two of the cooler GMs in the NFL. I mean, if we're being real, very cool. And, you know, usually star running backs, Super Bowl MVPs, they don't negotiate their contracts wearing, like, I think he had a pair of like Bud Light Oakley goggles on as he was talking about it. Or maybe, is that him right there? Yeah. So, I mean, they were getting after it. It was great. The stadium was essentially sold. The city was just like packed. I mean, kids everywhere. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, I can't believe they're not in school. I'm like, this is a teachable moment. Like, this is, you're going to learn a lot today. You're going to learn some good, some bad. And you're going to also just have a lot of civic pride and just like be a part of your community, high-fiving people that you wouldn't normally high-five. So it was a really great, it was a great day. And they kicked it off in a really strong fashion.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was at that NFC Championship game as well. I was up there with some Rams people, so we were not among the happy people leaving the stadium that day. But Seattle is such a great town with the energy, and just like walking out of that stadium was a scene out of a movie. You have the fireworks going off behind you. They're going to the Super Bowl, and obviously I had the long face there. But it's one of my favorite walkable cities, like from downtown to the stadium and Pioneer Square and everything there. And obviously the 12s are amazing. I even though I'm a Rams guy, I'm legitimately happy. And I'm happy for Matt. I think you are as well, I'd assume. Sam Darnold. Like, is there a lesson to be learned here from Sam Darnold's journey when it comes to the other 31 GMs and how we treat young quarterbacks in this league?
Without a doubt. And I'm glad you mentioned what an incredible game that was, because I talked to Matthew Stafford after that game and he was like, hey, I hate to lose, but I mean, we played as well as we could play and we lost that game. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to tip your cap. And one of the guys you got to tip your cap to was Sam Darnold, because Sam Darnold played, you know, complimentary football. Like, hey, let's not lose the game for a lot of the games this year. And it was great. But in that game, he had to cut it loose and he had to throw for like 450 yards and a bunch of touchdowns to go toe to the MVP of the league and Matthew Stafford. And I think the lesson is, don't play a young quarterback before he's ready to play. Now, Sam Darnold came out of USC, he was 20 years old, wasn't ready to play. The Jets caved to talk radio and Twitter and they threw him out there too soon. Josh McCown was the backup. He's the perfect guy to sit behind and watch and learn how to lead and how to play and how to be a pro. And he's a very smart player. It reminded me, the opportunity reminded me of what Andy Reid did when he first went to Philly with Doug Peterson and Donovan McNabb. Doug Peterson played that whole year, was kind of the punching bag. And Donovan McNabb sat back and watched Doug be a pro while they built the rest of the team. And then eventually Don played and had this great career. Now, Sam Darnold, that's just not what happened with the Jets. And so, you know, I think a lot of people thought he was a failure with the Jets. I think the failure, he takes a step back to go to San Francisco to take two steps forward in Minnesota. But I'm really happy for him. I think the lesson is, you can ruin You could try to ruin a young quarterback and throw him out, and you might actually get some other people hurt in the process if the guy's not ready.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with Donovan McNabb years and years ago, and years after that rookie season there with Philadelphia. And I'm a Browns fan. I went to Syracuse as well with Donovan. We're a couple of years apart, but I was there when he was a freshman. I was a senior. And I said, like, what would happen if you went to the Browns? Because I wanted you number one in 99 in the expansion draft. I said, would you have had the same career? And he said, no, probably not. And that's not a shot at Chris Palmer or anything, but like it's an expansion team. I had Andy, I had a chance to learn. And it just speaks to the fact that we all know circumstances absolutely, unequivocally matter. And I think it's great that Sam is the first quarterback from that 2018 class. Baker's had success. He's won playoff games. Obviously, we know Josh's story. Lamar has been an MVP, but Sam Darnold is the first guy to win a championship. One more lesson I want to ask you about. I know your time is short. In this coaching cycle, there have been three defensive guys hired. Saleh has been hired. Jeff Hafley has been hired, and why am I drawing up? Like, Jesse Minner has been hired. Those are the three. Mike McDonald now is a defensive head coach winning the Super Bowl. Do you think, Matt, that we will ever see the pendulum swing the other way when it comes to new coaching hires, head coaching hires, and we start hiring more defensive head coaches?
Well, I think what happens is when you go in for an interview, they ask you, let's just say you're a defensive head coach, they say, who's coming with you? Who's your offensive coordinator? Like, who can you get? And so sometimes you're not just hiring the head coach in a vacuum. You know, like in a Jeff Hafley situation, they're going to say, hey, you're coming with us. We're getting Jeff Hafley, who's kind of a Mike McDonald type guy, little, you know, whiz kid defensive coordinator guy. And I'm bringing with me a Shanahan disciple, a LaFleur disciple to run that same system. It's kind of what Mike McDonald did with this year with Clint Kubiak. You know, Robert Saleh, hey, we're going to hire you as head coach. Who are you bringing with you? I'm bringing Brian Daboll like that with me. So, like, I don't think you're hiring the head coaches in a vacuum. You're kind of looking at it, you know, using the Seahawks. It's a copycat league. Hey, we have Mike McDonald and Yak. We're running this Mike Shanahan style of offense that McVay and Kyle Shanahan run. And yet you're getting the Mike McDonald defense as a defensive coordinator. You know, I just think that, you know, you mentioned that there were 10 head coach openings this year and only three were defensive coordinators. I actually hadn't thought of it that way. I mean, there's 21 new offensive coordinators essentially in the league, you know, going into next year. I mean, it's wild the amount of turnover, but it is a package deal. And if you go back to Sam Darnold, the reason that he chose to even come to Seattle in the first place was because Clint Kubiak was going to be the offensive coordinator, and he was running the same offense that Sam had run in Minnesota and also when he was Brock Purdy's backup in San Francisco. So who your play caller is offensively is really important when it comes to who the quarterback that you're trying to sign back is. You know, Aaron Rodgers is an example. The chances of him going back to the NFL are greater now because it's that same offense that he knows he loves and an opportunity to play with a guy like Mike McCarthy. So it all fits in pieces of a puzzle, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah. And since you mentioned that, I'll let you go on this. He is coming back, right? I mean, it makes all the sense in the world that Aaron goes back to the Steelers, don't we?
I think it's more likely that he comes back than it is that he leaves. You know, it's like one of those things, okay, kind of like Matthew Stafford. Everyone's like, oh, is he going to come back? And Sean McVay's like, oh, I hope he comes back. Like, why wouldn't you come back? This is the best I've ever seen you play. And your team's great. And you got two first rounders. And like, you guys were right there. Like, literally, if Zach Charbonnet doesn't pick up a 2-point conversion and a fluke play in the second meeting between the Seahawks and the Rams, this might be a whole different kind of February.
Dude, I'll take a step further. If they don't kick to Rashid, if they don't kick to Rashid Shaheed week 16, it's a 14-point game of the fourth quarter. That game's over, and the NFC Championship game is in LA. Period.
Right. Right. And that's what's so special. I mean, I played in the Super Bowl here and, you know, we were so close and, you know, didn't get it done with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's why when you are able to get it done, and there were other years in my career where I really felt like we were good enough, like we had a great run, we had a really good team year after year after year, and we couldn't get it done. So when you do get it done, That's why I think you need to cancel school, cancel work, show up at the parade, make commemorative bottles, all of it. And but that's why I think the Rams, like they're so close. And I think for the Seahawks, you got to be, you know, tomorrow, not today, but tomorrow when you start looking ahead, you got to really think about, hey, the first step to repeating, you have to find a way to win the NFC West.
Yeah. And maybe bring Kenneth Walker back and maybe convince Seattle Public Schools to cancel school. But you know what? I don't think anyone went to school today.
That Kenneth Walker contract could be done by the, depending on, you know, on how the day goes, that deal could be done by the end of the day today.
It probably is. You got to be done as well. We appreciate your time, man. Matt Hasselbeck, have it a good day. Have it a great month. And have it a Bud Light as well. Love that, man. Thanks for squeezing us in. I appreciate you, man. Hope to talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks, Andrew.
Always love having Matt Hasselbeck on, especially when he has that fantastic Chuck Knox Seahawks cap on. Time for, do we have the band? One more thing before we go. Frank, give me your one more thing.
Real quick, I'm Matt Hasselbeck. I was stunned. I truly believe this is the deal. I think I saw more Matt Hasselbeck Seahawks jerseys than I saw Sam Darnold Seahawks jerseys wandering around.
Yeah.
Super Bowl. He's still pretty cool. Super popular in Seattle for good reason. What a great player. What a great dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do want to stay with the Seahawks celebration today, their parade, because Ernest Jones, who's a great time. He was really, really outspoken dude at the Super Bowl. One of the best guys there. After the game, he was feeling himself a little bit. And then he gets to the parade. It gives a not necessarily Jason Kelce-esque speech, but he came pretty close to it.
Man, but also, shout out to these badass motherfuckers who play this game the right way. Hey! Not only do we have the best defense in the world, we got the best team in the world. And quite frankly, if you got anything to say but my quarterback, you got anything to say but my defense, you got anything to say but my O-line, and you got anything to say by the city of Seattle, I got two words for you. F*** you! Yeah! We here to stay, and we ain't going nowhere.
Not necessarily for the kids, right? Like, okay, like, earmuffs, but...
Good for
him. Look, you go back to when people were criticizing Sam Darnold midseason, and Ernest Jones basically said that. Like, if you're criticizing my quarterback... F you. That kind of became a rallying cry for the Seahawks. I think that really kind of helped galvanize the locker room. You saw the love pouring out for Darnold after the game. Those guys love Sam Darnold. So Ernest Jones kind of keeping with the program, giving his, you know, kind of a throwback to what he said midseason about people criticizing Sam Darnold. I loved it, man. I thought that was great. Great punctuation to their season.
I laughed at it too. And the reason the t-shirt was blurred out, because the t-shirt was a picture of Sam Darnold with his right hand extended, as Goose said in the original Top Gun, maintaining international relations. The finger. Yes, I got it, Maverick. Yes, the finger. That's what Sam Darnold was doing. What do you got, C-Rub?
Yeah, we wondered why the Seattle area school districts wouldn't let everyone have an excused absence today. That's why. You come back from that, and you're all salty. Got all these kids in class.
Third graders.
Repeating Ernest Jones. Next thing you know, your third grader's got two words for you. All right. Well, my one more thing. Talk about things that just come out of left field with player podcasts. Obviously, Cam Jordan's had a very popular podcast, Pittsburgh Steelers star. Some things have come out in that podcast over an expanse of time. But today, the subject got brought up of Mike Tomlin and the fact that James Harrison's had things to say. And then Ben Roethlisberger's name is invoked as someone who was chirping a little bit about Mike Tomlin's end there in Pittsburgh. And this is what Joey Porter, who spent a couple seasons with Roethlisberger, apparently the reporters weren't the only ones having a hard time with Ben Roethlisberger in the interaction department. Let's hear what Joey Porter had to say about Ben Roethlisberger as a teammate.
He broke the brotherhood, then Seven definitely broke the brotherhood because, like...
That's the one I don't understand.
The Seven dude that did, that we don't talk about...
I know.
...is crazy. like out of anybody should talk, he should never grab a microphone and really talk Steeler business.
Yeah.
Because if we talking Steeler business,
like, yeah,
his ass is foul of all foul. Like the shit that he's did is foul of all foul. He's not a good teammate. Won the Super Bowl with him. But the person, he's just not a good teammate. Like, he knows that. Anybody in the Steeler building knows that. But we protected him. Because I've only won one Super Bowl, and that was my quarterback. So do I love my quarterback? Yeah, but is he a good person? No.
Is he a good person? No. Wow. Not a good teammate. He's not a good... Listen, I watched that, and all I think is there was a time when Mike Tomlin was managing Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, and Joey Porter all at the same time. I don't know. I mean, listen, Mike, if Mike didn't get some hazard pay out of that, I mean, this is the Steelers just, the more they talk, the more it seems like that team was a mess for a long time behind, you know, closed doors. And now they're all just showing it. The curtains have opened.
So my reaction to that was, okay, so Joey Porter is the first, and I let's give him a fireworks show and a parade to say what everyone has known forever.
And all the players came out.
Didn't want to say out loud.
But did you see the players who followed up on it on social media who were all basically clapping?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, a bunch of them. Mason Rudolph came out.
I'm not here to tear down Ben. I've never had a bad interaction with Ben. I mean, there was that time like 15 years ago where whoever was running Ben's Twitter account, whether it's Ben or a social media assistant, blocked every single member of the on-air staff at NFL Network. Whatever his reason, later those became unblocked. We weren't the only newsroom that had that happen. But believe me, if you've been around Pittsburgh, if you've covered that team, there is absolutely nothing Joey Porter said in that soundbite, nothing that is a surprise. Zero that is a surprise. As a matter of fact, as I didn't see the social reaction because, but see, Rob, I'm not surprised.
Quite a few ex-teammates came out applauding it. And I mean, this is a Hall of Fame quarterback. Okay. You don't always see this happen. Like and there've been other guys who, you know, you heard later, oh, they're monumental jerks, but it's rare that you see a known star teammate stand up and just say bad person, bad teammate, and then a bunch of other players come out and say, yeah, talk that talk, man.
Joey had two words for Big Ben. I'll tell you that.
He had
two
words
for
him. Did.
Yeah, they were. And keep in mind, Joey not only was a player, he was an assistant coach, mm-hmm. and his kid is still in the building every day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I mean, he has every reason to not say that, but he did say that, which tells you something. And then I love the look on Diana's face where she's like, oh, yeah.
I mean, I remember, like, as a reporter, I never liked, every summer, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. Like, this is just going to be, it was all, and then I remember all of a sudden, like, was nice one time, and I literally went up to someone with the PR staff and I'm like, what happened? They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, why is he being so nice? Something clearly is going on.
I remember the first time I ever went to Steelers training camp. They're doing like a red zone period. And Ben's in a t-shirt. Everyone else is in pads. And he's in a t-shirt. I'm like, look, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's late in his career. He gets his own rules. I totally understand it. Who am I to judge? I have never seen that anywhere. I'm like, what's going on there? They're like, oh, Ben will put pads on eventually, and then they'll do team eventually. I'm like,
another set of rules for sure.
Anyway, on that note, guys, this has been fun. Good to get back into the football world and get my brain talking football again. I love the Olympics. I also love my football, and I love talking to you guys as always. So we'll do it again next week. Have a fantastic football weekend, as somebody once said, except there's no football this weekend. There is, however, the 25th Olympic Games. I'll see you on Peacock and on USA. Actually, I'm on USA in about 45 minutes. I should go. That is C-Rob. That is Frank Schwab. I'm Andrew Siciliano. Thank you for listening to and watching Inside Coverage on Yahoo.